Exploring comebacks. Let's do that today in the Todd Wright Toddcast. Give me a couple of minutes to acknowledge those that pay for this podcast so you don't have to. Brandon Legal Group, your full-service law firm servicing the greater Tampa Bay area. What does full service mean? Well, if you have a legal need, why don't you reach out to them and find out? 813-902-3576 to request a free consultation, or go to BrandonLegalGroup.com. If you are an adult male residing in the state of Florida and you continue to pay by law permanent alimony to someone, we are coming up on the two-year anniversary of Governor Ron DeSantis signing that out of Florida law. You cannot simply stop doing it on your own, but Brandon Legal Group can convince you the law is on your side and how permanent alimony is no longer law in the state of Florida. You could alleviate or potentially reduce or eliminate future financial obligation due to permanent alimony. 813-902-3576, Brandon Legal Group, your full service law firm. Pin Chasers, four locations in the greater Tampa Bay area. Their newest location, literally down the road from the home office of Brandon Legal Group, as I've been there with Brandon Legal Group. Never charge you for shoes. That money stays in your pocket. You will not pay to rent bowling shoes at Pin Chasers. Let me say it again. You do not pay to rent the bowling shoes at Pin Chasers. As far as I know, just about everywhere else, you're going to pay for those shoes. Not at Pin Chasers. That's just one way they save you money. They have a ton of specials, food, beverage, unlimited bowling. You can find them on their website, pinchasers.net, or visit them on Instagram, at Pin Chasers. They also have a very active Facebook page, as they're active on Instagram. They annually host the Drew Garabo Down to Bowl fundraiser for the Down Syndrome Association of Tampa Bay. They do so much for our local community, and they're not going to charge you for those bowling shoes. For lane reservations, party planning, visit pinchasers.net, bowling, food, and fun. My email is right.todd@yahoo.com. I haven't gotten emails from you guys. Hello? You okay? You can ask me if I'm okay. Right.todd@yahoo.com, right.todd@yahoo.com. The Todd Wright Tour just completed another full golf season, four events between Labor Day and Memorial Day 2024-2025. I am planning for what may be the last season of Todd Wright Tour golf events between Labor Day and Memorial Day 2025-2026 as we speak. I do not like dealing with the weather concerns for golf, planning golf, playing golf between Memorial Day and Labor Day, which is why the Todd Wright Tour in recent years has skipped completely over those summer months. I'm still out there playing. If you need a fourth or just a second, you can email me at toddwrightgolf@gmail.com and say, hey, what's your schedule? But not hosting events. Very proud of the 51 events we've done, including the most recent Todd Wright Tour Championship, with big support from Jeff Hageman, Joe Kelly, Chris Black, Jared Atkinson, and so many more, Ebony DaCosta. The comeback. All right, it's not like there haven't been talked about memorable big comebacks in sports for years. They are something that gets our attention. We know they happen. It just seems like it happens more often. Now, there's one thing I'll take off the board immediately, and I brought this up around these most recent NFL playoffs. where so many numbers stood out to me. The reason why I gave you so many winners, I gave you the Eagles as a double-digit winner, as an underdog in the Super Bowl against Kansas City. Kind of had Kansas City doing that for almost a year, independent of the opponent, and then the Eagles certainly looked the part to be that opponent. There were no comebacks in the National Football League playoffs. We have 14 playoff teams, so we have 13 playoff games. No team that trailed at halftime won their playoff game. None. Yeah, go look it up. There was no big comeback in the Super Bowl. I did an entire podcast about the biggest issue with Lamar Jackson and Dak Prescott and why they don't win more playoff games is they don't put up enough points in the first half. It seems like they're not ready to go. They're not ready to make a statement. They're not ready to they say you got to play 60 minutes. Well, they're not ready to play the first 30 minutes, and that's a problem. As Lamar and Dak have averaged basically under their offensive has averaged under a touchdown on the board in those 10 losses that they have combined, and they are combined 5-10 in the postseason. But just recently, I'm recording this in the afternoon of Tuesday, May 6th. Last night in the NBA playoffs, the Knicks were down big. They won. Denver was down double digits with 4 minutes to go against the number one seed in the West, Oklahoma City. They won. The night before that, two game sevens in the NHL spread apart by a day. You had Colorado blow a 2-0 lead in the third period at Dallas, and the Stars, led ironically by Mika Rantanen, advance, and Colorado's out. And then the next Stanley Cup playoff game, St. Louis, who lit up Connor Hellebuyck early with 2 goals on 4 or 5 shots, up 3-1 in the third. And then late, Winnipeg gets 2, including one with 2 seconds to go, and then wins in double overtime. At the Masters, Rory McIlroy gave away 5 shots on the back nine before basically winning in overtime. He still won, but was it more of a celebration or more of a relief that he overcame himself? And that's just Rory against the golf course. Golf's a little different. He still won, but he gave away 5 shots on the back nine. And he had 4 double bogeys in the tournament, or it's one of the biggest romps we've seen since Tiger's win for the ages back in the mid to late 90s. In recent years, we've seen double-digit comebacks, and I'm not talking just 10 points in the NCAA tournament. We've seen 15. We've seen 20. The Florida Gators won a national championship by overcoming deficits, by coming back. I know they have a head coach who prior to this past year had never won an NCAA tournament game, as I believe a head coach or an assistant for that matter. He became the only he and Kevin Ollie, and I know Kevin Ollie leaves a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths for some things that went on with that UConn team. But only Florida's coach and Kevin Ollie, since Steve Fisher did it with Michigan, and not the Fab Five team, when Bill Frieder took the Arizona State job, win 6 tournament games without ever winning one before as a head coach. It was historic. There was a lot of comebacks there for the Florida Gators. They weren't the only one, but they were the signature one. Why all the comebacks? Again, they've been there, depending on how long you've been around, how much of a sports fan you are. When we're talking about coming back from a deficit, why are we seeing more of this than I think we used to see? Again, there have been historic comebacks, or you call it a comeback for the winning team. It's a collapse for the team that led and the losing team. We've had them before. They weren't part of these NFL playoffs. The Eagles didn't blow a 24-0 halftime lead in the Super Bowl, so it's not like they're everywhere. To me, they seem more prevalent than they have in previous years. And perhaps you're numb to it because there's so many, it feels more commonplace. Now, much like the NFL playoffs, I heard something on, and this is how bad the professional and college franchises are in Minnesota and how they've never had anything in 50 plus years to really get excited about or to celebrate. How the Minnesota Wild, I think now, have gone their last 42 postseason games where they've trailed going into the third period without a win. I'm amazed the Wild have played 42 postseason games. So it isn't everyone, but I think it's more prevalent. And the only point I wanted to make today in the podcast was, are you numb to it? Do you think it's more prevalent? Think about 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. I can keep going back further. I won't to date myself, but you guys know I've been around. We just had this. Two games on the same night in the NBA playoffs. Back-to-back game sevens in the Stanley Cup playoffs. What the Gators did on their way to a national championship in the NCAA tournament. The deficits they overcame. The Texas Tech game certainly comes to mind as one example. I believe they were down to Houston late as well. I see it happening more often than it ever has before. I recently completed a book written about Nick Saban. It was a biography written by Monty Burke, who's now working on a Pete Carroll book that I'm looking forward to. And before you tune me out and say, yeah, I don't want to hear about Nick Saban, would you agree he's been successful? I know most people don't like him. I get that. I didn't come away from the book liking Nick Saban. That's not why I want the book to inform and entertain me. Something I said for many years when I did radio shows. My goal was to inform and entertain my listeners. There are many listeners who still don't like me. But did I inform and entertain you? Maybe I pissed you off. I know I did. But my goal wasn't for you to like me. My goal was to inform and entertain you. I think the people I entertained liked me. The informing, if you didn't like the information, then we get into that ignorance category. Aside from all that, I don't know Nick Saban, never talked to him, never interviewed him. I know a lot more about him based on the Monty Burke book. Can we all agree Nick was successful? He won 7 national titles. 6 were at Alabama, 3 in a span of 4 years pretty early on, and then the book was published right after that. So the 4th, 5th, and 6th titles at Alabama and the end of his run was not part of the book. The book went to press about 2013. He also won 1 at LSU. He only had 1 losing season as a head football coach ever. And that was his second and last season with the Miami Dolphins. And a lot of that was based on the bad decision that was made by the organization to not sign Drew Brees based on medical concerns and instead trade a second-round draft pick for Dante Culpepper. Culpepper threw two career touchdowns for the Miami Dolphins. Two. Drew Brees went to the Saints, threw 491. That decision haunts the Saban legacy. If not for that decision, he probably never has a losing season. He may have never left South Florida, although he and his wife always seemed to appreciate more what they could do with colleges. And I think he stepped away from Alabama also, and he'll admit it's his age, but college football has become more pro-like with managing your payroll to players. But one of the things that when Saban was at Michigan State, a lot of things in his life changed. It wasn't that he wasn't good prior to being at Michigan State. You don't become the head coach of a Big Ten program without being good at what you do. But at Michigan State, a lot of things happened. It was when he met Jimmy Sexton, who was a very successful agent for him in negotiating future deals. He also met a psychiatry professor who, as far as I know, still to this day, or at least through the end of the book, he used some of the principles from this professor, even though the professor really knew nothing about football. At one point, there's one thing in the book about how Saban adopted something from the professor because the professor then started to look at the game of football for Coach Saban and said to him it was his opinion that the average football play took 7 seconds from the time the ball snapped to the time the play is over. You know, some are shorter, some are longer. It's an average of 7 seconds. And the professor got Saban to buy in to, if you get the best out of your players for those 7 seconds at a time, that's what you need. Granted, you need to prepare them. There's a lot more to it. They need to have the ability. They need to be physically gifted. They need to be well-conditioned. They need to be prepared. But for 7 seconds at a time, can you convince them, I need your best for 7 seconds? And then there'll be a break. And then I need you at your best for another 7 seconds, and on and on and on within every game. It was a big principle that was adopted. And then something else out of that was, whether Saban got that directly from the professor or always felt this way about it, was how too much winning or too much success creates entitlement and relief, and how there's a tendency when there was this flirtation with Saban going to Texas to replace Mack Brown after Saban won 3 national titles at Alabama. Some of it may have been that Saban felt there were too many entitlements and expectations with everyone around his program. And part of what he was good at was going somewhere and building it up rather than maintaining it at the highest level. He enjoyed building it up rather than maintaining. You can insert your own joke about how much he moved around and how many times he flirted with other positions, whether he took them or not, and how he took them. Is that happening, just to summarize here, is that happening a lot? Is this part of a modern philosophy with what we watch in our major sports? When the Celtics got up big on the Knicks the other night, when the OKC was up on Denver in the last 4 minutes the other night, when Colorado was up 2-0 on Dallas in Game 7 of the Stanley Cup playoffs, when St. Louis was up 3-1 late at Winnipeg in Game 7 of the Stanley Cup playoffs, when Texas Tech was up on Florida in the round of 8, when Rory was up 5 on the back 9 at Augusta. Is the mindset suddenly different? And that's one of the things that I took out of the Saban book that Saban often addressed, believed in. What's your motivation? What is your approach? I guess an old phrase would be, you don't hear it a lot anymore, right? But we used to hear this about football, about a prevent defense, right? A team's got a lead late, so they're not sending as many people to rush the quarterback. They're playing their DBs further off the line of scrimmage. The only thing the prevent defense prevents is it prevents winning. What's going on now? Because I see too much of it. We always had comebacks, but they made headlines because they were rare. They don't seem as rare anymore. Is it a mindset? Was Saban correct? Not just him. I'm sure there are others. I've been through the Jimmy Johnson book. I've been through a Bill Belichick unauthorized biography. The Johnson book was an autobiography. I did a book by Jeff Perlman about Phil, Shaq, and Kobe. That also was very telling about what a frickin' prick diva Kobe Bryant was. How much of this is the mental game when you, as an individual and or as part of a team, achieve a certain point within a game, within the standings, within a series? And you change your mindset. And suddenly, what got you to that point of being successful, you're not playing that way. You're not wired that way. And it makes you vulnerable. Just some thoughts. Because the comeback doesn't seem so rare anymore. Maybe that's a reason. I'm sure a lot of it also has to do with who's coming back to win. There's less giving up. That's a good thing. But there's multiple factors here. And I just wanted to explore that in this podcast. Thank you for your time. Thanks as always for listening. Thanks to Brandon Legal Group and Pin Chasers for what they do to make these podcasts free. You can always email me at right.todd@yahoo.com or anything golf related at toddwrightgolf@gmail.com. Have a great day.